You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 48 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 3rd, 2008. I am Martin Spriggs, and I'm very happy that you've decided to join us again for our repeat visitors. Thanks for tuning in again, and for our new visitors, thank you for trying us out. Hopefully you will come back and listen again, and hopefully we can provide something on this technology/ministry podcast that will be useful to you. This is our Classroom Technology Week, and we've got, of course, with us Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Welcome, Sally.
Hi, Martin.
And also joining us is, and I've got to get the title right here, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Martin and Sally.
How are you guys? Good Thanksgivings?
Great Thanksgivings. Much to be thankful for.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. How about you, Sally?
Yeah, we enjoyed a wonderful, restful time and getting all geared up for the Advent and Christmas season around here.
And you had family close this year.
That's right. A first for us from the last probably 8 years or so.
Beautiful.
We've been far away from family, and now we have family living right here in town and beautiful Sleepy Eye.
Good. With people to share those leftovers with.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's get back to the topic of the day. And because we are focusing this once-a-month show on classroom technologies, we thought it would maybe be a good place and a good time to step back and think about the teaching and learning process. Now, that sounds a little philosophical, but in the context of the Web 2.0 world we live in, all of us have heard that there are new techniques and new approaches to how a student learns and some of the research skills that are really needed by today's student that really are a little bit different than when we grew up, where you had kind of a source or a couple sources of information, typically the library, you know, in printed word, or if you were lucky enough to have the bookshelf full of the Encyclopedia Britannica like we did, you pull one of those out, and that was really the source of all research knowledge. So there were some skills involved with using those tools, but not a lot. Today is different, isn't it?
That's right. I'm reminded, Martin, of recently my kids needed an actual dictionary, a paper dictionary, and we couldn't find one in the house because we've become so reliant on dictionary.com. And why would you need a paper book? But this particular situation was really lending itself to actually having a book in their hand, and it was just a foreign concept to our whole family.
And you know that the dictionaries of today are probably outdated before they even reach the printing press. I don't know how many new words are added now on a regular basis, but compared to the way it was, let's say, 20, 30 years ago, just astounding the new words that are added day over day.
That's true. And you just you want to put your hands on the most recent and most relevant things. And that's across the board, not just dictionary research, but anything that you're looking up, it just doesn't make sense anymore to always go to the paper version of it because there's such relevant information available at your fingertips, literally, on the internet.
One of the reasons that we wanted to address this topic is that all three of us were at a conference a couple years ago, EduTech, up in, I believe it was in Oshkosh, where we heard a speaker by the name of David Warlick, who had a literacy and learning presentation that it was really an eye-opener for me. I don't spend a lot of time in the educational space, but he obviously does, and he's connected that to technology and then ultimately how kids learn. So maybe we can talk a little bit about the content of that presentation and how that is kind of a game changer as far as the classroom is concerned.
I was really keyed into his three R's. He took the three R's that we all are familiar with, reading, writing, and arithmetic. We've heard those since childhood as being the key things that children learn in school, and he expanded them into this new age. And instead of three R's, he actually had three E's, and then he added a fourth E at the end. Mm-hmm. So from the perspective of reading, he talked about exposing what is true. So it's not just reading, but it's actually digging deeper. Mm-hmm. Processing the information and sorting it out and finding out what's really relevant, what's true, or what's been posted out there or available to you that has some kind of a slant to it that isn't actually accurate.
So maybe we ought to stop. Maybe the best way to approach this is to kind of take these one at a time, because I think you could talk a lot about each one. Exposing what's true. To make this as practical as possible, what are some of the techniques that today's learner could use to figure out what is true and what isn't? Because in essence, everything on the web is not true. We don't have that comfort level maybe that we had with the Encyclopedia Britannica. So what are some of the things that we would use, or the approaches that we would take as learners, or our children as learners, when we're trying to expose what's true?
Yeah, if you're just looking at internet reading right now, sure. Because I think Warlick is even speaking in that context that Sally was speaking to. He's speaking of all types of reading, not necessarily just on the internet, mm-hmm. but there's still reading being done in classrooms, not on the internet. And even in that reading, I think the focus in the 21st century skill focus is definitely not to read and memorize content, but to read for the purpose of gathering information, sifting it, sorting it out, evaluating it. And, you know, we were taught that all along, but the emphasis on that in our everyday reading of any kind has become greater because of the internet and because of how we have to do that as we read content on the internet, because anyone can publish on the internet. So therefore that brings the need for being a more critical reader, puts a sharper focus on that need, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, there's just a lot more information now as well. There's no way that you can carve out a piece and say you've got everything that you need to know to go into the, you know, to go into the workforce, to go into this new world. The internet information age has just blown that off the map, where there's not a confined set of, if you know all this, then you're in good shape, because first of all this has, you know, I don't even know what the size is at this point, how fast it grows on the internet, because all of this is available, and it's changing, right? It changes from day to day. I've read studies where, you know, the skills that our students are learning today, you know, the jobs that they're preparing for jobs that don't even exist today, because that's how fast things are changing.
Yeah, Warlick had a very good comment to that effect too. This is the first time in history that we as educators are preparing kids for a world that we don't yet know mm-hmm. what it will be like.
Right. Yeah.
And
how do you do
the
that?
Way that we were? Yeah, that's right. How do you do that? And definitely, the focus is on not trying to, you know, who sets this basic body of content that everybody should know? It becomes impossible to do. So, the focus becomes more of teaching kids how to learn, mm-hmm. and the process of education has to be taught to kids. The process of learning is as important as the content that they learn. Sally had some good points that I've heard her speak about as far as what she uses with the internet in the classroom. She had mentioned multiple sources when kids are looking at, you know, when they're doing research, always to, you know, if you find something on one source, you try to validate it by checking multiple sources. So, Sally, isn't that one of the things you...
Right, Gail. That's totally at the top of my list when working with students and teaching them these research skills in the computer lab setting. I think all of us, whether we're talking about book knowledge, classroom knowledge, fact-based learning, or we're talking about just giving them skills to live in this world that we find ourselves living in now, we want for our children a discerning heart. We want to give them the skills to do that sifting and sorting and know what is true and have that discernment, you know, as part of their view of this world and the information that they're faced with. So absolutely, right. You know, validating against multiple sources is one of the key things that they can do to find out if what they're looking at is really true.
Right. And another little practical skill is looking, always teaching kids about the domain names, the .com, the .gov, .edu, and you know, each of them have a little different slant on the type of site that they're attached to and what that might mean. Can't always go by that, but if in the reading that you do, it will tell you that the .gov sites are supposedly the most reliable. They go through the most tests before they're allowed to be put out there, and those generally are pretty solid. I mean, they're real factual in nature, so I suppose it's a little easier to be credible when you're just, you know, giving a list of facts maybe. But those are generally, you know, any of your government sites if kids are looking for information that are pretty reputable.
Yeah, one thing I've
kids
noticed.
Think
go ahead. I'm sorry, Gail. Go ahead.
That's okay. The kids think that I always ask them which one they think would be, and they always say, oh, .edu, you know, the education, those will be the good ones. Mm-hmm. But then you can take them to sites that there are a lot of professors that are pretty far out there that teach mm-hmm. at some universities that have things out there that are pretty amazing. And also some universities allow students to publish off of their hosted
right.
sites too. So, but it's a good idea to get into that discussion with kids as well. And also then when you're there, you might as well go one step further. And another test is always, well, how many other sites are linked to this site? And let's look at what kind of sites, you know, considered it important to be linked here. And I used to always be able to find that in Google's advanced search, and they've changed their methodology a little bit now. So to my way of finding it, the best way that I do that is if you do URL.com, link domain, colon, URL.com, if you do that on the Yahoo site, I don't know if that works in every site. I didn't try it, but that's one test you can do. It'll tell you any link to any page hosted at that domain.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've noticed, Gail and Sally, about the internet, and this has kind of been happening for a while, let's say, in print publications as well, in magazines, is that everybody, you know, many people have an agenda. And what may look like a scholarly article is really sponsored by a commercial entity, you know, a .com or whatever, pushing
right.
their particular product or their particular slant or view of things. And they've kind of disguised it in such a way that it looks like a scholarly work, that it's something that, based on research, and that this should be the definitive guide. This should kind of be the place, and you could cite this as a source in a work or some analysis or research. So I think that would be something that we would want to teach, you know, any learner today, to kind of figure out what's real and what's not, and what's kind of driving
right.
the content that you're looking
yeah.
at. And that's not always easy to do.
Right, and that's changing. It mm-hmm. didn't used to be so much that way. You
right.
know, it's definitely evolving toward that.
Mm-hmm. One thing that would obviously come up in this context is Wikipedia. I think we're going to begin next week, and we'll kind of give a little plug for it now, talking about a book by Clay Shirky called Here Comes Everybody, where he's got an entry in there about the validity or invalidity, if that's a word, of Wikipedia. Can it be used as a credible source? And I know that some professors and teachers are all over the board on this. But, you know, a lot of people question, well, because this is an encyclopedia written by everybody, is it really a valid source? And I was doing a little bit of research and ran across an article in Nature magazine. They conducted, now this was a couple years ago now, they conducted a kind of a head-to-head competition between Wikipedia and Britannica, comparing it to the encyclopedia. and they had experts compare 42 science-related articles. So they picked 42 topics, and they compared the two entries for each. And the result was that they found, at least at this point, was that Wikipedia had about 4 errors per article, while Britannica had about 3 errors per article. They dug into that research a little bit more, and they found a little bit more information about what they were actually looking at, discovered that Wikipedia articles in the sample were on average 2.6 times longer than Britannica's articles. So basically that meant that Wikipedia had an error rate that was less than Britannica's. Now, that may not be definitive and to say, well, you know, Wikipedia is the source, but there is some compelling evidence to say that this this social folksonomic, I'm not going to be able to put that word together. I'm trying to make folksonomy into a word, and that's probably not even in the dictionary either. But basically,
we'll
that's maybe we can. We can add it to our own. We can create our own dictionary. But basically, people getting together to collect their wisdom and make things happen, which is really what Wikipedia does, but it kind of self-governs itself. And kind of an astounding thing has kind of just happened by itself. And, you know, whether that's credible or not, I think that goes into our discussion about, you know, is this valid research? Is this true or not? And obviously you want to triple check your sources as well.
Oh, and Warlick speaks to that, too. He talks about Wikipedia. I used to not let my kids use that, or I would say, if you use that, you have to use one other one and make sure it, you know, validates, and that can't be your sole source for whatever. But I'm getting to trust it more and not think that's such a big deal. And Warlick also says we shouldn't be afraid of Wikipedia. It's just, he says it's a microcosm of today's information landscape. Mm-hmm. And what we began today talking about, one of the three R's, the reading, and he talks about we should be, when we teach kids how to read anything, you know, the way we teach them how to read Wikipedia is really the way we should be teaching them how to read anything that they read.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Right.
So I think that's a valid point in line of what you just said. It is pretty trustworthy, but you're going to teach them how to read critically. But that's how we should be teaching them to read any print.
Newspaper, you know, what magazine, whatever.
Definitely the newspaper.
Absolutely. So the second R was arithmetic. What was the E that was associated with that, Sally?
Well, he called it employing information, so not just doing the calculations, but actually solving problems, accomplishing goals. Collaboration kind of falls in here as well. So using the information and taking it basically a step further. I think the basis of all arithmetic, and I'm a math major, so I'm a little biased here, but is logic, you know, and teaching those kids those logic skills is going to allow them to apply all this information that they've gathered. And so just kind of taking it to the next level with that arithmetic type logic skills that they need to be equipped with.
And he used
to me, it always,
go ahead, Gail.
Sorry. To me, it always seems like math is such an easy one to do this with, because it is inquiry. You got something to figure out, and there is a way to figure it out, and there's usually a couple ways you could figure it out, and then you talk about those different ways that you can come up with the same answer. To me, that always seems like a real, not such a hard one to create lessons for, but yet I think we're really stuck in this with the way we teach math. We still are teaching, you know, well, you do have to know the memorization of the tables and all that. But when you get up in higher math, I just see way too much teaching of, what do you call those things? I'm not a math teacher.
equations. I'm
married once, so I don't have to be.
That's
yeah,
one way
equations.
To do it.
You see people doing, you know, all those high-level equations, and that's basically memorizing again. They're memorizing how you do those. Mm-hmm. And I know you do need to do some of that, you know, but I think we just should be doing way more inquiry, like in the old days you'd call them story problems. And different ways to come out with the right answer. There is a right answer, but look at all the different ways you can come out with it. And then talk about, we should be talking more math than just doing content. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, that's an easy one to see. But I'm not a math teacher, so
now that you dissed all
math,
the yeah, now that you dissed all the math geeks out there, we'll probably find out who our math focused Wells Tech listeners are, because those are the ones going to give us feedback this week.
I do like math, because when I did teach it, I got to tell you this, in sixth grade that I taught it the regular way, but every afternoon we started with the problem of the day, and we spent. I had a really good class that year. We spent a lot of time talking about different ways we got the same answer, and I love that kind of math.
Yeah, Warlick had kind of an interesting. Warlick had kind of an interesting approach to that. I don't remember the his actual specifics, but he basically took Web 2.0 tools and used math skills to do something interesting.
Sure, and that's what Mackenzie does in his slam dunk lessons too with math. He has a whole section on math, and basically, math is data. Okay, you give kids a spreadsheet full of data, and now you ask them some questions.
Yeah, what can you learn? What can you do with it?
Yep, yep. And that's a whole different thing that we usually don't do. But I am an English teacher, so I'm really anxious to get to the writing.
Writing, and, and that's expressing ideas compellingly. So what's behind that?
Right. And I have a link, and I'm assuming Sally puts it in the show notes for the listeners today. I have a link of a video that I'd like people to watch that really, it's a vision of K-12 students today, it's called. And basically, it's a visual way of saying the same thing we've said before. Kids are already using the multimedia tools to communicate and create and remix and publish. They're doing that on their own, you know, in ways that, you know, we may or may not approve of. But yet only 14% of teachers are using those same tools, blogs, wikis, podcasts, other 2.0 things and multimedia things in their actual lessons where they have writing being done.
Right.
So there's a discrepancy, and it's getting larger and larger, and we have to close that gap and use some of those tools to allow kids to use those that media and connect that with their writing in order to do writing, express our ideas compellingly, as Warlick says.
Right.
So.
Right.
And it's a real competitive landscape, you know. They're going to have those skills in order to get their message out in the future, because the world's going to be on overload with all of the media sources and things, and to present things in a simple way or a way that is very clearly communicated but yet appeals to all this different senses that we're all tuned into now is going to take some skill development there. I venture to say that this year's Christmas wish list for our maybe middle school up, maybe even younger. My third and fifth graders are getting MP3 players this year, so you know it's getting younger and younger that they're getting digital cameras, they're getting MP3 players, they're getting flip cameras which they can do video with and easily put it out on the web. You know. They've
I've
got
noticed.
The tools, and they're going to be learning how to use them, and we need to guide that.
I notice after confirmation weekend here in the spring, the amount of iPods that multiply throughout the upper end of the building. So definitely kids are getting equipped. If I could back up for a second, though, I have something here that I don't want to miss. When we were talking, we kind of got away from the searching idea. There was a website that I definitely wanted to get in here that would be real important for teachers, and that's the Mequon-Thiensville School District website. It's just called, I think, Searching the Internet, Tools for Students and Teachers Searching the Internet. Recommended Internet Search Tools for Students and Teachers. That's the name of it.
Very catchy.
But that's what it is, though. And I have a link for it. If you have not seen this, you must see it. It's Dick Diener, actually, is the person who put this together, and he just redid it a little while ago, too. He's got all the search engines categorized by types of information they're best for searching for. It's a whole page and very colorful. You can't miss it. We have that marked on our toolbar here at school. We use it a lot. And more than that, underneath that are lessons for teaching how to search for 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade. And there are some examples. We talked about credible sites on the Internet. There's some examples of sites that aren't so credible, like the, I'll mention this one for Sally's benefit over there in Minnesota, the Coconut Growers Association of Mankato, Minnesota has a website in there. And
I'd have to look into that source.
Take your family.
Coconuts
take
in
your
Minnesota.
Family there for a visit, Sally. Your new family. They would like that. You go to the Spam Museum and then you go there.
Okay. We've got it all in Minnesota.
That's right. But these are very great sites, and he has it broken up for middle school. So if you had a plan in your school, you could teach his lessons for the 6th grade, 1 year, 7th grade, then 8th grade, and they're nicely done, and they meet some of these needs that we've been talking about today. So I just had to get that in there.
Yeah. We should have Dick on one of these times. I know he is an educator mm-hmm. that has truly immersed himself in technology
yes.
and produced some really cool stuff. I know he works yep. a lot with some Mac products and done some cool things as far as video podcasts and such. So we should
right.
have him on. Okay, well, that's probably about as much time as we can devote. Unfortunately, we could probably go on forever. I think there are many, many applications for this, and maybe those we can, you know, kind of hold over till the next time we have Gail on. The application for ministry, how does this apply to memorization? You know, if everything's at our fingertip now, you know, how much do we need to kind of plant in our brains, you know, as foundational material? I think there's all kinds of questions that this raises that probably deserves more focused conversation about. So great conversation so far, so maybe we pick this up next time.
Yeah, and a good place to start is just reviewing David Warlick's presentation. It's neat
yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
he shares it out on the web, so we'll make sure and include a link to that in our show notes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Let's go then to our picks of the week. Gail, you're a guest, I guess. you're semi-regular as opposed to
okay.
us regulars. So do you have a pick this week?
I do. I have so many picks, it was tough to come up with one. I changed it 3 times, but this is what I'm going to go with. And the reason I'm going with it is because the focus today, when we originally started, we were going to focus on 21st century thinking skills. And although we kind of did that in a roundabout way, we really never pinpointed that term. But that kind of is the, the catch-all or the... when Warlick talks about we don't know exactly what we're preparing students to be living in the next generation for as far as work goes. The 21st century homepage, the partnership between business and education to try to figure that out and prepare students adequately for what's coming, this page helps teachers, because teachers now realize that things are going to be different, and we have this sense of we really, maybe some of the stuff we're doing isn't necessary, we should be focused a little differently. That's all out there, but it's still kind of nebulous. So this website actually, this is a quote, it says, "Everybody seems to be talking about 21st century skills, but what does it mean for the classroom teacher who needs resources for tomorrow's mathematics or history lesson?" So this site actually takes some very reputable places like the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, the Kennedy Center for the Arts. It puts a lot of resources in the hands of teachers and helps them learn how to use them addressing these things we've been talking about today and further. It's called Thinkfinity, 21st Century Homepage. And what it is, those of you that have been around for a while remember the Marco Polo emphasis.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Marco Polo as a site hasn't existed for quite some time. But if you look at this site and all of their little logos, icons, you'll recognize a lot of them from the Marco Polo site. So the good National Geographic stuff. And they have partnered with the same agencies, plus Verizon. And Verizon is huge in this whole educational 21st century endeavor, and you can probably figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of businesses like that, plus these educational places, have partnered together to create this site. And I've been looking at sites of this type lately to try to build a list of them, and so far this is my favorite one for teachers to get a good start, have some resources, and feel like they're doing what we've been talking about doing here today.
Thinkfinity.org/21stCenturyHome.
Right. .aspx.
And we'll put that in the show notes. Thanks, Gail. Great resource. Sally, you're up at the plate.
All right. Mine ties into our discussion a bit as well, because as we're teaching these skills, obviously there's a lot of things out on the internet that are of questionable sources and also questionable content that we don't really want our students to stumble upon or to have access to. And so mine's a pretty simple thing. It's actually a Google preference. When you go to the Google site, there are actually three levels of searching the site or filtering the results that exist there. And everyone's set at the middle level as a default. When you go to Google, you have moderate filtering, which is going to exclude most of the explicit images that might come up in your search results, but it doesn't necessarily exclude web results, text-based content that might be explicit in some way. And so if you click on the little link, it's on the Google site, there's a link next to the search box in small letters that says preferences. You're going to see the ability to set safe search filtering. And you can set it to strict filtering, and that will filter both explicit text and explicit images. So that's a notch up from the default that you're going to be getting when you search the Google site. So basically, I went to each of our school computers and set it to strict for each of those school computers so that hopefully it's going to do its part to filter out explicit sites that we wouldn't want our students to get to. Obviously, you'd want to do this on your home computers as well. You're not going to get 100% accuracy with your search results. You know, nothing can protect you from everything that's out there all of the time. But I believe this is going to help you eliminate most of the inappropriate material that you don't want your students accessing. So again, it's a simple link on the Google site. Just click on preferences, and you'll see the ability to choose between these different levels of safe searching.
Great. Yeah, we've talked about content filtering. This is just another layer. You should always have, you know, in a school setting in particular, another piece of content filtering or proxy server that does that. We've talked a little bit about that in the past. And also, we've talked about OpenDNS. I can't emphasize the use of that enough. It's so simple, and I think it does a great job as just another layer of defense where you can, in somewhat of a granular way, block that content by category or even block content by a specific entry that you would put in the log. So opendns.com is a place to go for that. But this is a kind of a no-brainer. I think Google has paid attention, and I think this is a good thing. If you have got multiple browser types, if you do Internet Explorer and Firefox, you're going to have to do one on each browser, because I think it saves your preference as a cookie, so you've got to make sure that you're doing it on each browser too.
Correct.
Great pick. My pick is somewhat education related, but I think it's not just classroom, but Bible class, et cetera, et cetera. It's called BiblePlaces.com, and maybe many pastors are aware of this, and if you aren't, you really need to go to BiblePlaces.com. I think it is a tool or a resource or a website that everybody needs to kind of have on in their toolbox. In essence, it's a site that features essentially pictures of Bible places, Bible lands, photographs, descriptions of sites. They cover places like Israel, Jordan, Egypt, Turkey, Greece. They say they have an emphasis on biblical archaeology, geography, and history. So if you go there, they'll categorize their pictures by Bible places. So you could actually look up Thessalonica or Corinth or Delphi or Philippi, Athens, et cetera, et cetera. And you would see pictures of today, but you'd also see pictures of archaeological digs and what they've been able to unearth and what they've preserved, some history about them. I think this would have been a great tool to have had, you know, any time that you're talking about a location in a Bible study or in a classroom, saying, well, we're going to learn about Paul's journeys today. And you could easily go to this site and map out a number of pictures and give the student, whether they be adult or child, a visual of what the terrain looked like. You know, is it hilly? Is it desert? Is it is it forested? Just kind of give you a great perspective of what it looked like, you know, what it looks like there, and maybe what it looks like today. So I think a great, great resource, and they're adding to it all the time, and very, very well done. So that's BiblePlaces.com.
And as someone who sits in Bible class, I love it when we have this kind of thing added to our presentation mm-hmm. in Bible class. It just makes it so much more real to see the place
yep.
like that.
Yep. Let's remind our listeners, Sally, about some upcoming internet streaming events that we've got on the calendar.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We've got Christmas music every weekend from now through the Advent season, starting with this Saturday night, mm-hmm. December 6th at 5 o'clock Central Time. There's going to be a live stream concert from Christ Lutheran Church in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. It's going to be the Christian contemporary music of Koine, and this is a concert sponsored by our Wells Military Services. I think this is an awesome thing. They're doing this to reach out to our military personnel around the world and just give them a little taste of home with this special Christmas concert in their honor. And again, stream live, so you can't catch it later. You've got to tune in Saturday night at 5 p.m. Central Time to be a part of this, but really awesome concert. I remember watching, I believe Koine did this last year as well, and mm-hmm. it was really special. Mm-hmm. And we have other concerts coming up as well. So when you're on that Streams Live page, you'll see the schedule. We have a couple of concerts coming up in the following weekends, one even in Spanish, and we're also going to be streaming the audio only of the MLC Christmas concert on December 14th. So just lots of opportunities to be part of these special concerts.
Wonderful. Yeah, take advantage of those. Those are neat. Community feedback. Who's talking to us, Sally?
Well, for those of you that are Wells Tech Listserv subscribers, you got an email this week from Jason Wignett, who sent a link to a really cool Christmas music site. And all the music that's posted there is in MP3 format, and it's available for use royalty-free. So a lot of the music, I'm sure, is from the public domain, and whoever recorded the music or whatever instruments they use to produce the music on the computer or whatever, they've published it, and it's royalty-free. So Jason said in his email, you know, maybe you need it for some special music on your website or for some pre-service music or whatever, here's your opportunity to grab some files and use them as you need it mm-hmm. for your Christmas planning. So the URL is feelslikechristmas.com, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Wonderful. Yeah, keep the feedback coming. In fact, we've got a lot of feedback that we're not going to put on this show. We're going to kind of dedicate a show to answering questions and sharing good tips and tools, you know, with our audience, kind of a feedback show, as it were, and maybe we're going to do that in a couple of weeks. So we're going to save up a few items of feedback. We've got a pretty good laundry list of things that we're going to cover. Also wanted to mention that you're always welcome to go to the Wells Tech website, wellstech.wells.net, and offer your comments. There's all kinds of ways to communicate with us via voicemail, email, our Facebook page, the listserv that Jason used. Just a reminder also that you can be a contributor to our Wells Tech Wiki. That's wellstech.wetpaint.com. We've got two threads there that you can participate in, two separate wikis. One that we started probably 2-3 months ago on church media. So if you have experience or would like to learn more about what's going on with church media, that's a great place to look, because we talk about microphones, audio systems, video equipment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Participate in that. Either use it or contribute to it. It's very easy to do. We're getting new participants on the wiki all the time. And just this last week, we added a new wiki on the content management system. So if you are thinking about maybe building a website based on a CMS or content management system, that would be a great place to check it out. You've got kind of our thoughts there and some other contributions. So wellstech.wetpaint.com is the place to go. Wanted to remind everybody about what's coming up next week. I'm kind of excited about this. I don't know about you, Sally, but we're going to be discussing a book by, and I mentioned it earlier in the show, by Clay Shirky, Here Comes Everybody, The Power of Organizing Without Organizations. And when I read this book, I couldn't help but think of all the ministry applications for it, and that's kind of what we're going to focus on. I'm just going to read, and I hate to read to you because you can read it for yourself, but if you're at all interested, buy the book and read it along with us as we kind of go through it and discuss it. But let me just give you from the flap here a couple paragraphs to kind of whet your appetite This is right from the inside flap of the book itself. Here comes everybody. A woman loses her phone and recruits an army of volunteers to get it back from the people who stole it. A dissatisfied airline passenger spawns a national movement with her weblog. Citizens with camera phones outperform photojournalists documenting the London transport bombings and the Indian Ocean tsunami. The world's largest encyclopedia is created by unmanaged participants. A handful of kids in Belarus create a political protest that the state is powerless to stop, and it goes on. But basically, we're going to be talking about the power of the internet and how that might be used for the spread of the gospel. And I think we've got a lot of different applications. So if you're of such a mind, go out and grab the book. Here comes everybody, Clay Shirky. So we're going to be talking about that next week. Also, we're going to be playing an interview with Ray Brown, congregational assistant from Summerlin, Las Vegas, Summerlin Lutheran in Las Vegas. He's using on a very regular basis a technology called Hello World video email. Very interesting concept, and Ray is a listener to the WellsTech podcast, and I think he's got some great things that he can share with us and maybe something you can use in your church or ministry. That's about it for this week. Sally, Gail, anything else from you guys?
Nope, just very excited about using these research skills with my students out there, getting them equipped.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Gail, thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and we look forward to having you back next month.
Right. I look forward to it.
Very good. Let's close the show this week with the Wells featured artist, which is Revelation, the singing group from Wisconsin Lutheran College from their album Led by the Light. The song is I'm Free. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm free in Jesus' name. I'm free to live and to proclaim.
'Cause I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy
inside of me.
Inside of me.
I'm free.
I'm free. I'm free in Jesus' name.
You know that I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved. I'm saved by the blood of the Lamb.
'Cause I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved.
I'm saved by the grace of the great I am.
Well, no more I'm saved.
Well, no more I'm saved.
I'm born again.
I'm born again.
I'm saved.
I'm saved by the blood of the Lamb.
Well, I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free. I'm free in Jesus' name.
You know that I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free to live and to proclaim.
'Cause I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy
inside of me.
Inside of me.
I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy
inside of me.
Inside of me.
I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy. Inside of me,
I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free. I'm free in Jesus' name.
Well, I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy
inside of me.
Inside of me,
I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy
inside of me.
Inside of me,
I've got the joy.
Well, I've got the joy
inside of me.
Inside of me,
I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free.
I'm free in Jesus.